This is For the Record program number 1126. Biopsyop Apocalypse Now, Part 2, The Democracy Killing Virus. This is being recorded on April 20th of the year 2020. So it's 4-20-2020. For whatever that is worth. This is a program in a series that I am going to be doing about the COVID-9 outbreak, which I am convinced is an op, quote-unquote, and a biopsyop of absolutely brilliant and utterly diabolical design. People have not done a good job of evaluating the political context in which this exists. Had the COVID-19 outbreak occurred in a vacuum, we'll see. I've done a number of programs, most recently For the Record 1124, actually analyzing not only DARPA/Pentagon programs, researching bat-borne coronaviruses, in particular viruses that were known to be present in bats that were in China and countries bordering China, but also gain-of-function experiments in which animal viruses, including a coronavirus native to the horseshoe bat in China, which was deemed in a recent New York Times article by Carl Zimmer to be the closest relative, or it was believed to be the relative of this virus, which is believed to have come from a horseshoe bat from China. Dr. Carl Barich in 2015 took a coronavirus from a horseshoe bat that bat is native to China, and then genetically modified it with genetic material from a SARS-like mouse virus, and the result was a new virus that could infect human lung tissue and mice. That type of experiment is called a gain-of-function modification. Responsible critics had called for, and for a time had achieved, a moratorium on such experiments because they were simply deemed to be too bleepin' risky. If those viruses got out, then there would be hell to pay. I would note that in early August of 2019, the CDC forced the Army's Medical Research Institute of Infectious Diseases at Fort Beecher to close down for a period of time due to gross safety violations. It is a safe bet that a lot of that DARPA research, or at least some of it, was being done at that facility. In the moratorium on gain-of-function experiments was implemented in 2014. In 2017, the Trump administration lifted that moratorium. Dr. Barich was commissioned to reconstruct the closest relative of this virus, or the type that they selected from scratch. When you see the predictable journalistic bromides that the virus was not or could not have been created in a laboratory, that is simply absurd, because as of 20 years ago, with gene editing and with designer genes, so to speak, so G-E-N-E-S, it is, and for roughly 20 years, has been possible to create any virus in a laboratory from scratch using genes that can be ordered. The technology had set off alarms about bioterrorism, so close watch was kept on the providers of those genes to make sure that no bioterrorists got a hold of that technology. However, it is the safest of bets that any Pentagon-related company would have been able to do just that, to order those genes. Steve Bannon, Trump's former campaign manager, chief strategist, initially appointed when Trump became president to the National Security Council, a man whose dominant political slash ideological influence is Julius Evola, E-V-O-L-A, an Italian fascist who was originally a supporter of Mussolini, but he decided that Mussolini was just a little bit too moderate. So he had an ideological gain of function manifestation, and he switched his support to the Nazi SS, who by the end of World War II were financing Evola's work. Bannon is at the epicenter of the anti-China effort, and we'll review some of his networking with people like J. Kyle Bass and Tommy Hicks Jr. later on in the program. The COVID-19 outbreak comes in the middle of an absolutely well-documented destabilization effort against China, in which the individuals and institutions involved in the Hong Kong unrest were not only networking with key American political figures, including Mike Pence, Mike Pompeo, formerly head of CIA, now head of the State Department, but they were being financed by the NED, the National Endowment for Democracy, co-founded in the early 1980s by CIA Director William Casey, and a documented CIA cutout. By the same token, the Uyghurs in Xinjiang province, a group of Turkophone Muslims, many of whom are jihadis, associated with Al-Qaeda, the Muslim Brotherhood, and ISIS, are also have long-standing links to NATO and have been used as a vehicle against China from the People's Republic of China from its inception. They have links to Chiang Kai-shek's Kuomintang. They, too, are financed by the National Endowment for Democracy, and a key head of the World Uyghur Congress, their top political body, was someone who was doing translations at Guantanamo. The former chief of Guantanamo, Admiral Harry Harris Jr., formerly in chief of the Pacific, in charge of all naval operations in the Pacific Command, is now the U.S. ambassador to Korea, and the Shincheonji cult may very well have been doctrinally and operationally overlapped with the Unification Church, certainly appears to have been the vehicle for bringing the virus into Korea. I suspect that their Wuhan branch may very well have been used to bring it to Wuhan as well. Steve Bannon is networking, and the CIA, through its Broadcasting Board of Governors, is networking with outfits like the Falun Gong cult, whose Shenyun dance troupe tracked through the Bay Area in late December and January of 2019-2020. I wonder if they might have been a vector. That, again, is an organization networked with CIA, networked with Steve Bannon, and that is a fascist mind control cult that believes that gays, mixed race children, etc., are going to hell. They believe that their master, Li Hongzhi, can install an actual physical swastika in the abdomen of followers that will evolve in alternate clockwise and counterclockwise manner, thereby bestowing spiritual purity upon the individual. They believe that women who are post-menstrual are also spiritually unworthy, but through their adherence to Master Li Hongzhi, they can regain their menstrual cycle and become spiritually worthy. The Falun Gong cult believes that Master Li Hongzhi can levitate and that he can walk through walls, and they believe that space aliens are inhabiting, tiny space aliens are inhabiting humans, and that they are responsible for things like the invention of computers and airplanes. When you take people like Steve Bannon, referencing people like Julius Evola, when you take freak shows like Falun Gong, and when you give them the power of the National Security Establishment, what do you expect? The COVID-19 outbreak has occurred in the very middle of that, and the timing of its initial detection in China, right around the time of the Lunar New Year holiday, China's most festive, the number one holiday in China, also a big commercial and travel day. This is asking an awful lot of coincidence. An article in The Atlantic that I used in, for the record, 1124, had an article where they said, what are the chances that a bat-borne coronavirus would have just the right genetic makeup to infect humans without having gone through an animal host first? And a scientist responded, very low, unquote. The actuarial possibilities of all of those things, the gain-of-function experiments, the destabilization of China, Trump's open trade war against China, the Pentagon DARPA research into just those kinds of viruses, the abuses at Fort Detrick, the remarkable happenstance that a virus like that just happened to be able to infect human beings without going into an animal host first, very low. Unquote, according to a scientist, this is not a coincidence. It is a brilliant operation, in my opinion, diabolically brilliant, but absolutely brilliant as well. It is a bio-psyop. The bio part speaks for itself, but it is having a profound effect on people's psyche, on the economy, and, the entire human race. And in this series, I'm going to be analyzing various cognitive aspects of this bio-psyop. I want to stress emphatically that the breakdown of this series into various aspects of the bio-psyop is for cognitive purposes, and that really, to understand this, you have to be playing not just three-dimensional, but six- or seven-dimensional chess. All of these are overlapping. They are part of the bio-psyop apocalypse, and I'm breaking it into this series for conceptual slash cognitive understanding. I could not be more pessimistic. There are forecasts that up to 75% of retail outlets may should be permanently closed because of this. 40% of restaurants nationwide may close. Many of the nail salons and beauty parlors that we see here in California may close. That will tsunami over directly into commercial real estate. That in turn will tsunami directly over into the financial sector. I was at the bank today, and they had a line outside of the bank, and the banker was calling people. Everybody was spaced out at 6 feet, social distancing, etc. And he called up, is there anyone here who is going to make a withdrawal of less than $8,000? Quick, when was the last time you made a cash withdrawal from a bank of $8,000 or more? A run on the banks, I wouldn't be too surprised, maybe going on now. I couldn't be more pessimistic. I do this because, doing programs like this is one of the very few things that makes me feel good. Also, I'm in my 41st year on the air. All of my work is available at spitfirelist.com, available for download for free. I would emphatically recommend that listeners to this program go to the website, get a hold of the flash drive that contains all of my work, because I believe, frankly, this is in all probability the apotheosis of our civilization. I do not think we're going to make it. A lot of people say, well, we're going to get through this. That would be nice. Many people will at least live through it up to a point. But I don't think, quote, we, unquote, are going to, quote, get through this at all. And I think at the very least, people have a responsibility to the generations that follow to try to preserve a record for legacy purposes so that they can understand just what in hell happened to them. Now, for the record, 1126, BioPsyop Apocalypse Now Part 2 is called, subtitled The Democracy Killing Virus. And we are going to be looking at ways in which this virus is killing democracy in addition to a great many people. We're going to begin by reading some excerpts from a New York Times op-ed column from April 10th of 2020 by Elizabeth Gotein, I may be mispronouncing the names, capital G-O-T-E-I-N, and Andrew Boyle, B-O-Y-L-E. The op-ed column, Trump has emergency powers we aren't allowed to know about. And the articles themselves are printed in the written description for this broadcast, which due to the logistics of the shelter-in-place order, I will have up on the website before I have the audio track available. So people can read this at spitfirelist.com. Excerpting this New York Times op-ed column from April 10th of this year, the most notable aspect of presidential emergency action documents might be their extreme secrecy. One more time. The most notable aspect of presidential emergency action documents might be their extreme secrecy. It's not uncommon for the government to classify its plans or activities in the area of national security. It goes on to say that members of Congress, however, are able to review those plans. It then goes on. By contrast, we know of no evidence that the executive branch has ever consulted with Congress or even informed any of its members regarding the contents of presidential emergency action documents. That is a dangerous state of affairs. The coronavirus pandemic is fast becoming the most serious crisis to face this country since World War II. And it is happening under the watch of a president who has claimed that Article 2 of the Constitution gives him, quote, the right to do whatever I want, unquote. It is not far-fetched to think that we might see the deployment of these documents for the first time and that they will assert presidential powers beyond those granted by Congress or recognized by the courts as flowing from the Constitution. I remember in the 2016 campaign, all the people saying, man, the Republicans are just as bad as the Democrats. I remember people like Susan Sarandon saying, well, Hillary Clinton was just as bad as Donald Trump. Donald Trump kept a copy of Hitler's speeches, Mein New Order, a published sequel to Mein Kampf, Hitler's personal manifesto, in a drawer in his night table. He used to read that before going to bed at night, according to his ex-wife, Ivana. Hillary Clinton didn't keep a copy of Adolf Hitler's speeches in her night table for late night reading. And ultimately, I think the devastation that is going to overtake this society and our civilization owes in part to those people who have retreated into a grotesque fantasy world, an ideological Disneyland, saying, no, the Republicans are just as bad as the Democrats, or people like Susan Sarandon. 48% of the eligible voters did not vote in 2016. And I think they will come to regret that. Now, and we've dealt with some of this in For the Record Program 1125. From Politico Magazine of March 21st of 2020, DOJ, Department of Justice, seeks new emergency powers amid coronavirus pandemic. This is by Betsy Woodruff Swan, W-O-O-D-R-U-F-F, Swan from Politico of March 21st of 2020. It will come as no great surprise to many that, quote, ex-unquote, CIA officer William Barr, originally a George H.W. Bush appointee, is the Attorney General, and that he is claiming some remarkable powers. Among these, in one of the documents, the Department proposed that Congress grant the Attorney General power to ask the Chief Judge of any district court to pause court proceedings, quote, whenever the district court is fully or partially closed by virtue of any natural disaster, civil disobedience, or other emergency situation, unquote. The proposal would also grant those top judges broad authority to pause court proceedings during emergencies. It would apply to, quote, any statutes or rules of procedure otherwise affecting pre-arrest, post-arrest, pre-trial, trial, and post-trial procedures in criminal and juvenile proceedings and all civil process and proceedings, unquote, unquote, according to draft legislative language the department shared with Congress. And noting here, the request raised eyebrows because of its potential implications for habeas corpus, the constitutional right to appear before a judge after arrest and seek release. Quote, not only would it be a violation of that, but it says affecting pre-arrest, unquote, said Norman L. Reimer, R-E-I-M-E-R, executive director of the National Association of Criminal Defense Lawyers. Quote, so that means executive director, so that means you could be arrested and never brought before a judge until they decide that the emergency or the civil disobedience is over. I find it absolutely terrifying, especially in the time of emergency. We should be very careful about granting new powers to the government. Just think about Trump reading Hitler's speeches and taking a cue from that. Now, we also have touched briefly on an article from Newsweek magazine of March 18th of 2020 by William M. Arkin, A-R-K-I-N, exclusive, Inside the Military's Top Secret Plans If the Coronavirus Cripples Government, again by William M. Arkin. But coronavirus is also new territory where the military itself is vulnerable, and the disaster scenarios being contemplated, including the possibility of widespread domestic violence as a result of food shortages, are forcing planners to look at what are called extraordinary circumstances, unquote. Above top-secret contingency plans already exist for what the military is supposed to do if all the constitutional successors are incapacitated. Standby orders were issued more than 3 weeks ago, and this is March 18th, to ready these plans, not just to protect Washington, but also to prepare for the possibility of some form of martial law. That has not been implemented yet, but that is no thanks to people like Donald Trump. And again, that article and link are available in the written description for this program. And I would also note that those plans from Newsweek of February 27th of 2020, exclusive, again by William M. Arkin, A-R-K-I-N, exclusive. U.S. military activates its never-before-used federal response to combat coronavirus outbreak. And in this we find, while being hit with coronavirus at rates equivalent to the civilian population, the U.S. military has activated its defense support of civil authorities, unquote, apparatus, establishing liaisons in all 50 states, activating units and command posts, and moving forces to provide medical, transportation, logistics, and communications support in New York and Washington states. Lieutenant General Laura Richardson, R-I-C-H-A-R-D-S-O-N, the command of Army North has requested and received approval for the deployment of ground units in response to the now declared national emergency. And I would note that there are rumors going around concerning martial law. I think that is quite understandable. From that same article from February 27th, Newsweek, because of so many rumors flying in social media, the Pentagon established a rumor control website to beat down stories of military imposed quarantines and even martial law. And it said it was going to limit details about the specific numbers of coronavirus cases and operational details. Who knows? It is not clear from this context if that means coronavirus cases in the military. It is not really all that understandable. It certainly is not mysterious why people would be taking the social media with discussions of martial law, because the Trumpinator himself, the Donald, as his first wife Ivana called him, has been tweeting and bleating about just those kinds of things. In fact, he discussed quite openly a military quarantine of New York City and other, quote, hotspots for the virus. He has backed off of that. But again, with someone like Donald Trump, who used to go to sleep reading Adolf Hitler's speeches, and when he's doing things like this from CBS News of March 28th of 2020, Grace Segers, S-E-G-E-R-S, Trump reverses earlier call for quarantine on New York residents. And note this from that article. Earlier Saturday, Mr. Trump said that he is considering declaring, unquote, enforceable, unquote, quarantine affecting some residents of the New York metropolitan area, possibly including New Jersey and Connecticut. He called the region a, quote, hotspot of the coronavirus outbreak sweeping the country. Mr. Trump reiterated his remarks before the send-off of the USNS U.S. Naval Ship Comfort that he was considering a quarantine of the area. The Comfort is a naval hospital ship which is carrying over 1,000 beds and 1,200 medical personnel to New York City. Using active duty troops to enforce a quarantine would require the president to suspend the Posse Comitatus Act, which forbids the use of the armed services for law enforcement. I would note that Ron DeSantis of Florida was also calling for the use of the National Guard to get New Yorkers out of Florida. Governor Raimondo of Rhode Island was speaking in a similar fashion. So it certainly is altogether understandable why the Pentagon would be dealing with rumors of martial law. Whether that actually becomes a reality is something we will have to wait and see. One of the things, we'll be talking about this when we get to Serpent's Walk, in that manifesto, I believe, ostensibly a novel, the U.S. is devastated by genetically altered biological warfare weapons. Martial law is declared, and the descendants of the SS have infiltrated the military, and they take over. Some of the martial law contingency plans that have been on the books ever since the late 80s call, in the event of an emergency, for the deputization of paramilitary right-wingers as federal deputies. If, for the sake of argument, elements within the military or CIA loyal to what I call the underground Reich, were deliberately vectoring the military with the virus, and if that sufficiently degraded the military's force, we might see something like that. Some of the nightmare scenarios of the military being vectored by people inside the military will scare the fresh fertilizer out of you. Just imagine a nuclear submarine submerged on a long patrol where you have the virus going through the crew. I mean, Jesus, it just scarcely bears thinking about. Well, Donald Trump has a lot of company because it is not just in the U.S. that people who crave absolute power are taking advantage of this bio psyop to have the democracy, have the virus become a democracy killing virus. Once again, from the New York Times of March 30th of 2020. For autocrats and others, coronavirus is a chance to grab even more power. This is by Salam, S-E-L-A-M, Gebrikadan, G-E-B-R-I-K-A-D-A-N, from the New York Times of March 30th of 2020. One of those autocrats is Viktor Orban of the Fidesz Party. In Hungary, a new law has granted Prime Minister Viktor Orban the power to sidestep parliament and suspend existing laws. Mr. Orban, who declared a state of emergency this month, now has the sole power to end the emergency. Parliament, where two-thirds of the seats are controlled by his party, approved the legislation on Monday. Quote, "The draft law is alarming," unquote, said Daniel Karasai, capital K-A-R-S-A-I, a lawyer in Budapest, who said the new legislation has created a big fear, unquote, among Hungarians that, again quoting, the Orban administration will be a real dictatorship, unquote. And it is not just countries like Hungary, which, by the way, during World War II was an Axis country under the Arrow Cross fascist organization and Admiral Miklos Horthy, H-O-R-T-H-Y, countries with a long democratic tradition like Great Britain, or what's left of it, are doing the same thing. Of Great Britain, some of the provisions will give the government unchecked control. The legislation gives sweeping powers to border agents and the police, which could lead to indefinite detention and reinforce hostile environment policies against immigrants, critics said. Each clause could have had months of debate, and instead it's all being debated in a few days, unquote, said Adam Wagner, a lawyer who advises a parliamentary committee on human rights. Quote, "These are eye-watering powers that would not have been really imaginable in peacetime in this country before," unquote, said Silke, S-I-L-K-I-E, Carlo, C-A-R-L-O, the director of Big Brother Watch, a rights group. She called the measures draconian, unquote. Privacy is being dramatically curtailed as well under this virus. There is an article in the New York Times. Well, before that, we have spoken about Narendra Modi and his Hindutva fascist government in India, and not surprisingly, Modi has taken advantage of the COVID-19 outbreak to suppress media that had been critical of his suspension of the rights of Muslims in the disputed province of Kashmir. Also, some of the media voices that had criticized the Indian authorities' brutal persecution of Muslims in both Mumbai and in New Delhi, well, they have been shut down or dramatically curtailed by Narendra Modi using the COVID-19 outbreak as an excuse. From the New York Times of April 3rd of 2020, media dissent fades as Modi tightens grip. This by Vindu Goel, or Goel, G-O-E-L, and Jeffrey Gettleman, G-E-T-T-L-E-M-A-N. There is a link in the written description for the program. Now, noting the following from Vanity Fair magazine of April 9th of 2020. Privacy is going by the boards as various forms of high tech and some of the big high tech companies are being employed to help combat the epidemic. An article by Eric Lutz, L-U-T-Z, from the Vanity Fair of April 9th of 2020. Coronavirus surveillance is entering dystopian territory. The article begins with discussion of Elizabeth, New Jersey, where the city authorities have drones patrolling the streets to enforce the social distancing order. Talking about that, quote, as Thomas Galkin, G-A-U-L-K-I-N, of the Bulletin of the Atomic Scientists noted earlier this month, many Americans, often fierce in their objections to perceived government overreach into their lives, might normally object to dystopian images of flying robots policing lockdowns. But these, of course, are not normal times. Quote, if drones do begin to hover over U.S. streets to help control this pandemic, Galkin wrote, it will be yet another visible reminder that we've entered a public health twilight zone where Americans had no better option than to embrace what was once only imaginable and never real. Indeed. Does that scare you? Well, this ought to scare you even more. We have spoken at great length about Peter Thiel. He is a Silicon Valley titan, one of the driving forces behind Facebook, and the driving force behind Palantir, a Palo Alto-based company that is the alpha predator of the electronic surveillance landscape. Peter Thiel's Palantir was heavily involved, along with Steve Bannon and Robert Mercer, in the Cambridge Analytica outrage, and illustrating again how the breakdown of the bio-psyop apocalypse into individual programs is for cognitive and conceptual purposes, because they are part of the same whole and they overlap. Peter Thiel is as rich as Croesus. I mean, he's just fabulously wealthy, and he is getting wealthier. Note the following from Forbes magazine of April 11th of 2020. This by Thomas Brewster, B-R-E-W-S-T-E-R. Palantir, the Peter Thiel-backed $20 billion big data cruncher, scores $17 million coronavirus emergency relief deal. He also has another deal as well. This also from Forbes, this, however, from March 31st of 2020, also by Thomas Brewster. Palantir, the $20 billion Peter Thiel-backed big data giant, is providing coronavirus monitoring to the CDC. Although these sums are almost lunch money to Peter Thiel, the point is not only are the rich getting richer, is not only is wealth being concentrated, but people like Peter Thiel are emerging larger on the political landscape than before. Peter Thiel is not only a big backer of Donald Trump, he is someone who explicitly is opposed to democracy, because he feels that democracy is inimical to wealth creation, and also he feels that one of the major black marks, so to speak, against democracy, is that women are allowed to vote. He thinks that was one of the major downturns in the disintegration of democracy. He doesn't think women are allowed to vote, should be allowed to vote. This is a fellow who takes his cues from the Third Reich's top legal theoretician. He is very big on Team Trump. And again, his Palantir firm is the alpha predator of the electronic surveillance landscape. Of those two Forbes articles, Palantir, the $20 billion valued Palo Alto tech company, backed by Facebook funder Peter Thiel, has been handed a $17.3 million contract with one of the leading health bodies leading the charge against COVID-19. It is the biggest contract handed to a Silicon Valley company to assist America's COVID-19 response, according to Forbes Review of Public Contracts, and comes as other Californian giants like Apple and Google try to figure out how best to help governments fight the deadly virus. Skipping down. The money from the federal government's COVID-19 relief fund is for Palantir Gotham licenses. That's Palantir with a capital P, and Gotham, like in Gotham City of Batman, Gotham licenses, according to a contract record reviewed by Forbes. In light of the fact that this appears to be a coronavirus from the Chinese horseshoe bat that has been played with, the use of Gotham here from the Batman movies is grotesquely ironic. One wonders if that is a purposeful irony. Again, just peripheral rumination here. Again, the money from the federal government's COVID-19 relief fund is for Palantir Gotham licenses, according to a contract record reviewed by Forbes. That technology is designed to draw in data from myriad sources and, regardless of what form or size, turn the information into a coherent whole. The quote platform, unquote, is customized for each client so it meets with their mission needs, according to Palantir. Palantir Gotham is slightly different to Foundry, with a capital F-O-U-N-D-R-Y, a newer product that's aimed more at general users rather than data science whizzes with more automation than Gotham. As Forbes previously reported, Foundry is being used by the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, the CDC, to ingest information from all manner of hospitals across America to see where best to provide more or less resource. Palantir is now working with at least 12 governments to their responses to coronavirus, according to two sources with knowledge of its COVID-19 work. One more time. Palantir is now working with at least 12 governments on their responses to coronavirus, according to two sources with knowledge of its COVID-19 work. That includes the UK's National Health Service, which is using Foundry for similar purposes as the CDC. Something to note about this electronic invasion of privacy. Previously, physician-client transactions were considered private. Well, you can kiss that one goodbye. And I would note in something that illustrates not only how the bio-psyop is really a multidimensional undertaking here. But in particular, one of the shows we are going to be doing concerns the wealth concentration virus. Now, note the following. This is a New York Times story by Jonathan Martin and Maggie Haberman, H-A-B-E-R-M-A-N, of the New York Times, from April 19th of 2020 from the Western edition. GOP aiming to make China the scapegoat, by, again, Jonathan Martin and Maggie Haberman. Skipping down. with the death toll from the pandemic already surpassing 34,000 Americans and unemployment soaring to levels not seen since the Great Depression, Republicans increasingly believe that elevating China as an arch-enemy culpable for the spread of the virus and harnessing America's growing animosity toward Beijing may be the best way to salvage a difficult election. Republican senators locked in difficult races are preparing commercials condemning China. Conservatives with future presidential ambitions of their own, like Senators Tom Cotton and Josh Hawley, are competing to see who can talk tougher toward the country where the virus first emerged. Party officials are publicly and privately brandishing polling data in hopes Mr. Trump will confront Beijing. Mr. Trump's own campaign ads have endorsed the strategy, releasing an attack ad last week depicting Joseph R. Biden Jr., the presumptive Democratic nominee, as soft on China. The ad relied heavily on images of people of Asian descent, including former Governor Gary Locke of Washington, who was Chinese-American, and it was widely viewed as fanning the flames of xenophobia, skipping down. The strategy includes efforts to leverage the U.S.-China relationship against Mr. Biden, whom Republicans believe is vulnerable because of his comments last year playing down the geopolitical challenge posed by China and what Republicans claim was high-paying work that his son Hunter has done there. A lawyer for the younger Mr. Biden said he was uncompensated for his work, skipping down again. But with the coronavirus death toll growing and the economy at a standstill, polls show that Americans have never viewed China more negatively. In a recent 17 state survey conducted by Mr. Trump's campaign, 77% of voters agreed that China covered up the extent of the coronavirus outbreak, and 79% of voters indicated they did not think China had been truthful about the extent of infections and deaths, according to a Republican brief on the poll, skipping down. Mr. Hawley, H-A-W-L-E-Y, a first-term Missouri senator, has also denounced China, calling for a United States-led international commission to determine the origin of the virus and demanding that American victims be allowed to sue the Chinese government. "This is the 9/11 of this generation," said Mr. Hawley, adding that he hopes Mr. Trump, quote, "keeps the pressure high," unquote. He said that Republicans should make the issue central this fall and demonstrate, quote, "how we are going to come out of this stronger by actually standing up to the Chinese." And that will be very interesting indeed to see how well that goes. I would note in this regard, the Democrats are basically going to, it looks like, try to double down on anti-China rhetoric at the same time as pointing out that Donald Trump was slow to mobilize resources. I would not be surprised to see this play out the way the impeachment proceedings did. Americans are going to be terrified, they're going to be stressed out, the social distancing, the cabin fever, people are reporting the dire economic stress. All of these things are going to be driving people up a wall, and they're going to be looking for somebody or something to hate, and it may very well work that scapegoating China, and China is, in my considered opinion, that this is the 16th hour of programming I've done about this, is also a victim of this. It might very well work. Certainly it is absolutely racist, and I would note in this regard that the co-chairman, this reminds me very much of the 1952 election when Arthur Bliss Lane, one of the top officials with the Crusade for Freedom, a covert operation with a foreign overseas component in which fascists who had collaborated with the Third Reich from the Bulgarian National Front, the aforementioned Hungarian Arrow Cross, the Romanian Iron Guard, the Croatian Ustashi, the Slovakian Linka Party, and most importantly the OUNB, whose successors are in power in the national security establishment of Ukraine today. They were used as, quote, fascist freedom fighters, and domestically, they were brought in as part of the Republican Party to be used to get out the Eastern European vote in the so-called Rust Belt, or the industrial areas of the Midwest and Northeast, among, again, ethnically Eastern European peoples there who had traditionally voted Democratic. Arthur Bliss Lane was not only one of the top officials with the CFF, godchild of Alan Dulles, overseen by Richard Nixon. Chief spokesperson was Ronald Reagan, and the person who handled most of the machinations to bring those Nazis into the country was William Casey. They were transformed into a permanent branch of the Republican Party when George H.W. Bush was head of the Republican National Committee. Now, Tommy Hicks Jr. and Arthur Bliss Lane was also a top official of the 1952 Republican campaign while simultaneously working with the CFF, and he was working to basically use the enthusiasm for the CFF to get out the vote for the Republicans. Now, the co-chairman of the Republican National Committee, as we saw in, for the record, 1111 and 1112, among other programs, is a guy named Tommy Hicks Jr. He is at the epicenter of the interagency governmental networks that are being used for the anti-China destabilization effort. He is an investment partner with J. Kyle Bass. J. Kyle Bass made his fortune betting against the subprime mortgage situation in 2008. In fact, he was an employee with Bear Stearns, and he leaked the word about how shaky Bear Stearns was to a Wall Street Journal reporter, and that brought down Bear Stearns, and he made a ton of money. He has been invested asymmetrically to the Hong Kong and Chinese economies. In other words, if they go down, his investments go up. Both have gone down as a result of the covert operations, and his investments have no doubt gone up. He, in turn, is heavily networked with the aforementioned Steve Bannon, okay? And when we see Trump's campaign taking, basically scapegoating China and taking a xenophobic bent to its forthcoming operations, that is very reminiscent of the 52 election and of the role of Arthur Bliss Lane. And bear in mind that J. Kyle Bass and very possibly Tommy Hicks Jr. are profiting from insider information about these ops. I've noted that Steve Bannon was heavily involved with the Cambridge Analytica operation and Breitbart. Robert Mercer was involved with both. Robert Mercer is no longer the CEO of Renaissance Technologies, but he is apparently still a major investor. Renaissance Technologies has profited handsomely from the remdesivir drug, which is being seen as promising. That is made by Gilead Sciences. And Gilead Sciences CEO for many years was Donald Rumsfeld. Okay, so this is the old gang, so to speak. And again, the concentration of wealth virus is inextricably linked with this as well. And again, I think the Tommy Hicks Jr., J. Kyle Bass, Steve Bannon nexus, and the coming anti-China attack by the Trump campaign exemplifies the synthesis of covert operation and domestic political operation that we saw in the 1952 election, as discussed not only in Christopher Simpson's Blowback, a section which is linked in the written description, but also in AFA 37. And again, illustrating how The Republican agenda is being realized by this operation. We're going to conclude with some excerpts from a column by Paul Krugman of the New York Times from April 17th of 2020, in the Western edition of the New York Times. Starve the beast, feed the depression. And what he's talking about is how Mitch McConnell is playing politics with this, although he is not, he wants to shell out more money for small businesses, but not for state and local governments, because governments are bad, according to the Republican ideology. Also, the Postal Service is on the brink of bankruptcy, and Trump has already said he will not bail out the post office. Krugman writes, "Everyone, and I mean everyone, knows what is really happening. McConnell is trying to get more money for businesses while continuing to shortchange state and local governments. After all, starve the beast, forcing governments to cut services by depriving them of resources, has been Republican strategy for decades. This is just more of the same. Oh, and Trump personally has ruled out aid for the Postal Service." I'm afraid that the coming economic debacle is going to afford people who have a lot of money and are making more of the opportunity to, again, concentrate wealth even more effectively, because they are going to be able to buy up assets at pennies on the dollar. We will be talking about the enormous profits some hedge funds have been making. I've already spoken about the Mercer Renaissance Technologies Fund. There certainly appear to have been people who got insider information about the coming of this virus and were able to sell short and to use that to make a whole lot of money on the market. Again, the various aspects of the COVID-19 op, I believe, a bio-psyop apocalypse, are overlapping, and I'm breaking them down for conceptual purposes. In today's news, Massachusetts, another blue state, is being very hard hit, as are Connecticut, New York, New Jersey. New York City, I saw a broadcast last night, has more cases than any country on earth. I don't think that is an accident. I think they have been vectored. Detroit is very hard hit. The places that are being devastated are controlled by Democrats, and I would note that this is almost certainly going to impact the 2020 census, and when congressional districts are apportioned on the basis of that census, they are going to be badly distorted. It remains to be seen if we have the election. I suspect it will be massive voter suppression, perhaps the interdiction of voting by mail. We will see. We will even see if somehow the election doesn't get canceled. I will be talking more about this in our next program. We're next going to talk about the eugenic virus, that in, for the record, 1127. This, however, concludes For the Record program number 1126, Bio-Psyop Apocalypse Now, Part 2, The Democracy Killing Virus. This is being recorded on April 20th of the year 2020. I'm Dave Emery. Have fun.